You're listening to the Kids Ministry Collective Podcast. Each episode of the KMC is designed to inform, encourage, and entertain those who love kids and serving kids ministry. We hope you'll enjoy today's podcast and maybe even learn a thing or two. Now let's join our team for this episode of the KMC.
Welcome to another episode of the Kids Ministry Collective Podcast. I'm your host, Tom Bump, and I'm looking forward to spending some time with you today as we discuss some topics that are pertinent to kids ministry, student ministry, family ministry, however you want to look at it. Thinking about building growth structures and structuring yourself for growth, positioning yourself for growth in ministry is an important thing that we should always be thinking about. We all want our ministries to grow in some way, shape, or form. And so how do we do that? Well, it takes a lot of work behind the scenes. It takes a lot of what I call tilling the soil. And so I've got a guest on the first time coming with us to the KMC, and I'm really looking forward to the conversation. From what I've learned about her, that this is something that she's very passionate about, and so I'm excited to see and hear from her this time on this episode. Her name is Julia Ball, and Julia, welcome to the Kid Ministry Collective.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about who you are and where you are and what your scope of ministry is.
Okay, well, like you already said, my name is Julia, and I am a Canadian and a proud one. We are living currently, my husband and I are living in Newfoundland, which is an island right out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. So I am actually currently, one of the blessings of being Canadian is we get a full year of parental leave when we have a little one. So I am just finishing up my year of maternity leave after we had our first child, Levi. But I am going back to my job as a family and children's pastor at our local church, Calvary. My husband and I have both been there for 4 years now. And I also serve as the provincial children's director for our denomination here in Newfoundland.
That is awesome. And I got to say, I think technically you are our first international guest.
Oh, wow.
It just hit me that I had forgotten, and I'm thinking, you know what? No, I don't think I've ever had anybody outside the States on the show. So that's awesome. Now we can say we're an international podcast. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is awesome. Yeah.
Well, anyway, Julia, thanks for being on, and I'm looking forward to our conversation. Is, like I said, we're talking about setting up growth structures, and one of the things that my mentor already has always said and pounded into my head and my heart is that you got to start doing now while you're small, what you'd be forced to do later when you're bigger. And so obviously in order to see growth, in order to watch God do what only he can do, we need to be faithful on our side. And I know that this is a passion of yours because you responded to a request about this episode, and mm-hmm. So I can't wait to hear what you're going to share with us. So let me ask you, why is it so important for you, if our ministries are going to go and we're going to see our structures, you know, get set up, and for God to bless us, why is it so important that setting up structures is key? Why is it so pivotal to you to have a structure in place?
Well, just to start off, let me give you a little bit of context of where I am in ministry. Mm-hmm. When my husband and I came into this church 4 years ago, he came on staff as the youth pastor and me as the children's pastor. Our church actually had no next generation ministries existing at the time. And so they brought us on because they were starting to see families come into the church. They wanting to reach out into the community. And so Andrew and I were tasked with building from the ground up, which was very overwhelming at the time. So Andrew read in a book somewhere or heard it somewhere, and he said it to me time and time again, that we wanted to model in our ministry, similar to what you said, what we wanted to see in the greater church and in our ministries eventually. Yep. So for us, building structures shows that we were anticipating growth. It wasn't that we expected to be this small forever. It was somewhat, for me, structures for growth are a sign of faith. It's saying we are anticipating that God is going to do something in our ministry, and we want to be prepared for when he does. But beyond that, it also showed for me, and it still shows, I mean, we're still not a mega ministry by any means, but it shows the people who are in our ministries that our ministry is valuable, that, you know, their presence in our ministry, the kids that are there right now, the volunteers that are right now, are just as important to us right now when we started with 10 as they will be when we reach 100 or 200 or 500. Right. And I think it just shows value. And beyond those kind of more abstract concepts, it also helps you feel like you know what you're doing. Uh-huh. You know, you feel like you're not just in chaos. You know what to expect. You know what your ministry is going to look like week to week, instead of it just being, okay, what are we doing today? Or what are we doing this morning? You know, you feel like you're more prepared for what's to come.
Right, right. Oh, I totally agree with that. And I love that saying, you know, that we're preparing and showing that demonstration of faith. That's totally true. You know, if we're going to be faithful with little, then we know that God's going to bless us with more. But if we're not faithful with what we have, then why should he give us any more? And if we're not prepared for it, another question my mentor always said to me is, you know, if your ministry doubled or tripled next Sunday, what would you do? Would you be ready for it? Could you handle that? Are you prepared for that? And so obviously I think you'd agree with me then that we have to structure ahead of that blessing, and get ahead of that, so that God can grow it and show up in a huge way. Well, let me ask you, what are some of the areas that you've set up structures, and then we'll talk about what those structures look like. What are some of the areas that in your ministry that you've set up?
Okay. So, the first thing that we set up when we got here, which was a challenge, and I think is for most churches, was a protection and a screening policy for our ministries and our volunteers. You know, in a small church, when you don't have any volunteers or kids, it's easy to say, oh, we don't really need this. We only have a couple kids. We know everybody. Right. But we decided right away that we wanted our ministry to be known in our community and in our church as safe. So that was one of the first things that we did when we hit the ground, was to set up a protection policy, because we wanted, whether we had 10 kids or 50 or 100, we wanted parents and volunteers to feel like they were bringing their kids to a safe place. The next thing that we set up, which was equally challenging, and I just finished listening to your episode from last week, and I know they touched on this a little bit, was a structure for recruiting and training volunteers. Mm-hmm. So how were we going to do that? What was it going to look like? And we took every volunteer that we had very seriously. You know, even if there was two teachers in a class with three kids, we trained them as if they were teaching 30 kids. And so took that very seriously. We spent intentional time setting up structures for recruitment and training and all of those things. And then one more structure, I guess, that we set up practically was just preparing our church facility for ministry. You know, I share this story time to time, but when we came into our church, the nursery was like dated back to the 1970s or 80s. Like it was carpeted. It was not baby proofed, and it hadn't been used for years. It was just there because when they built the church, they thought, you know, we need a nursery. So we had no babies in the church at the time, but I decided we're going to revamp the nursery. So we took out that carpet, we put down some hardwood, we baby-proofed, we painted, we picked up new toys and all those things. And I think people kind of thought that was a little crazy because we had no babies. Mm-hmm. And for the first 2 years we were at the church, we had no babies. But right now in our nursery on Sunday mornings, we have 5 babies and 3 more on the way.
Wow.
So, you know, we were prepared when those babies started coming. We didn't have to panic about where were we going to put them or what we were going to do. We already had it in place. Yep. So it just transitioned smoothly. So that was a big one for us. And that's just like a practical thing. But we wanted, when people came into our church, to see we were serious about ministering to families and kids.
Absolutely. Wow. I got to applaud you for that. Because I hear from a lot of smaller church leaders, and that's exactly what they struggle. They let those limitations of what they think they don't have or what they perceive that they don't have, or what they even physically don't have, and they let that keep them from saying, well, since, yeah, I mean, they could easily look at that and say, well, we don't have any kids, so we won't make the nursery a priority. Mm-hmm. Well done to be, you know, again, that's what I was talking about at the beginning of this episode, is we have to till the soil if we're going to see any kind of harvest. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering, what were some of the struggles you had when you were setting up some of these structures? Because obviously, like you said, your congregation's going, we held it, we don't, why should we invest in this? So what did you do? Because I'm sure there's some people out there sitting in that have been in the shoes that you were in, and they're like, yeah, you're right, I don't have any kids, or I only have one or two or three kids, and I only have two volunteers. And what were some of those struggles that you had in setting those up? Because I want to help people get an idea of how they can overcome some of those kind of obstacles or challenges.
Well, I think for me, the biggest personal struggle was actually being willing to have vision and dream. You know, it was really easy to think that, okay, I'm in this small church with one or two kids, and that's all we'll ever have. And so for me, the first struggle I had to overcome before I even tackled the ones in our church and congregation was to set myself up and spend time in prayer and start believing that God actually did want to use our church and did want to bring families in. So once I started to have that faith and kind of started to have that vision, then I had to tackle the rest of the struggles, which are some of the ones you mentioned. So the first one that we tackled, and I think everyone faces, was lack of volunteers. Mm-hmm. Being in a smaller church, a largely older congregation, people were excited and passionate about what we were doing, but they didn't think they could help.
Right.
So for us, and for me, especially with the kids, we had to figure out, okay, how are we going to get people on board with this ministry? How are we going to get people to volunteer? How are we going to convince them we need two people in each of our classes on Sunday morning when we don't have the kids to put in there? And so it was really a process of trial and error, you know, trying different methods of recruitment, selling vision to people one-on-one, putting them in a place on a trial basis and saying, just try it and see what you think, and praying that they would actually love it when they got there. So that was one of the biggest struggles we had. And another struggle I really faced personally was actually figuring out what to do. I mean, a lot of stuff that exists in kids ministry and some of the great resources that are out there are written and constructed for people who already have ministries, you know, who have mm-hmm. those structures in place, who have more space, who have more kids, who have volunteers. And so for me, it was really finding people who are in the same boat as me that I could reach out to and connect with, because there were a lot of times that I felt like I was the only person who was facing this.
Right.
And so those were some of the biggest struggles that I faced as we were trying to set up some of these structures to grow.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good, because I agree. And that, well, that's part of why we started the Kid Ministry Collective Facebook group, and we started with the radio show, because we wanted to connect. Honestly, I was in a smaller church, a lot smaller than what I'm in now. And I had to deal with some of those kind of things too. And so again, I feel what you've gone through, and I know there's listeners out there that are going, yeah, I get this. This is right where I'm at. I've got people that have, you know, are telling me, well, I've already done my time in kids ministry. I'm sure you've heard that one before.
Yes, a few times.
And which is so not biblical. And I don't want to get on my rant on that one, but it's easy. It is easy to do, because it's like, whoa, show me chapter and verse that says, you know, you've done your time anywhere. Mm-hmm. I just don't see it in scripture. If you can't back it up with scripture, stop saying it. It's stinking thinking. So yeah, you know, we all get those things, but what I love is what I saw and heard in your description is that you didn't let those limitations keep you down. You prayed, you asked God to show you a vision for what you could do, and you started doing it. And I think obviously that's why God's blessing you guys, because you made that decision, and figured out, okay, what do I need and how can I get it? What do I have to do to be creative? And reaching out to other people. And that's one of the things we keep saying a lot on the podcast is if you feel alone, reach out into our Facebook group, contact us. We'll give Julia's information at the end of the show. You can contact her and say, hey, talk this through with me a little bit more. Help me see what you were seeing. Because we don't want you feeling like you're alone. That's just not, again, that's going to be more stinking thinking. You got to break that down and say, I'm not going to let that stronghold take root. I'm going to break through this. And instead of saying I don't have, you serve a God that has everything. So He has all the resources. So bust it loose. So that's good. So, well, what kind of processes did you go through as you decided what you needed for growth? How did you start evaluating? I mean, because you obviously had to dream out a little bit. So you had to look at what your physical space could handle and say, okay, here's what we can do. What would that process look like?
Well, I think that it started off for me with just saying, okay, what is it that I want to see in this ministry? And I'm not talking about, you know, I'd like to see this many kids or this many families, although that is important and that comes later, but more of, okay, we want to run a children's ministry that some of the things that, you know, myself and a few key volunteers came up with, a ministry that disciples, a ministry where kids feel loved, a ministry where kids feel safe. And we started talking through some of those bigger concepts and just casting vision of what we wanted our ministry to look like. And then the next step, which was much harder because sometimes it's easy to dream, but was, okay, how do we start achieving this? And that required a lot of brainstorming. There was a lot of days when I first started in this position where I felt like I wasn't really doing a lot of actual work because there was, you know, that figuring out, okay, how do we do this? How do we start a children's ministry on Sunday mornings? How do we reach out to families in our community? How do we actually do this? And doing the research and praying and thinking through before we took those first steps of actually doing. Mm-hmm. But once we got to that place where we felt like we knew what we wanted to do, we had to start taking some action. So, funny story, I guess. I came to this church. My husband, Andrew, was here in January, and then we got married in July. So I started in the church the 1st of August. And I decided, rookie mistake, that I was going to run a VBS at the end of August. So, yeah, exactly. So you have to think, I know nobody in the church or community. We have like one or two kids maximum in our church congregation, no volunteers, no protection policy, but I decided I was going to run a VBS. So I remember the week before the VBS, I was like, I'm so in over my head on this. My family actually came to visit from out of town, and I had them at the church with me spray painting props and cutting things out with a hot knife. And, you know, they were my team essentially. So we ran the VBS. It was just a weekend thing. I think I had maybe three volunteers except for me and my husband. And we had like 30 kids show up, which was amazing, but had no clue what to do with them. So that was probably an example of how not to go about the process. You know, you need to dream, you need to think big, but you also need to take small steps start. So after the VBS, which wasn't a disaster, but looking back could have been much better, I decided, okay, we can't start huge like this again. So just a small step, I said, okay, we're going to start running a regular children's church program during our Sunday morning service. Mm-hmm. So at that time, there were a couple ladies in the church who had been doing children's ministry for years, but didn't have any real curriculum, weren't really sure what it is that they should be doing. So they were going out with the kids lots of Sundays, but it was basically just organized chaos, which kids ministry is a lot of times anyways, but even more so. So did a little bit of research, found a one room, all ages, children's church curriculum that fit for us. And we started doing that week after week. We had two volunteers. I think we had enough volunteers so that the ladies were only in every 3 weeks instead of every single week. And we just started building our children's ministry from there.
Uh-huh.
And we ran that children's church ministry like it was the best ministry that ever existed. You know, we made those kids feel like they mattered. We put prep into it. I decorated the very small classroom we had, had massive Oriental trading orders. I'm sure every children's pastor can relate to that.
Yeah.
All kinds of stuff. And we just started from there. And then a little while after that, we decided, you know, in our context, a midweek program is still really popular. So we decided after a while that we were going to start running that for the children in our community. And so again, we started small. We did a large group, small group thing. We had maybe 10 or so kids, a couple of leaders, but we just started where we were, but just did it with excellence. And for me, that was a huge thing that, okay, we might not be able to run a massive VBS, or we might not have the space or the volunteers to run, you know, a multi-class, multi-grade, loads of small groups program, but we can do what we can do with excellence. And I think for us, as we started doing it with excellence, we said, okay, we have this structure. So when we started to grow, we just added more leaders and kept going with the structure that we were using. And we are still using that same structure today. We just made it so it could expand as we grow. It's what works for us. It's what works for our context. And I just had to embrace that and say, okay, we might never be able to do some of these very cool things I see people doing online, but we're doing what's working for our church, and that's what matters at the end of the day.
Good. Yeah. So you've obviously taken time. I mean, I'm just kind of recapping. You started with prayer and vision. You started asking why we do what we do, how do we do what we do, what can we do with what we have. You started with, you know, making it a safe place. You started with some volunteer recruitment and training. So you've prepared yourself. You started fixing facilities. As you started looking at all of this process and now where you are now, what do you see that you're going to need to double in size now? I'm just curious about as you look at where you are now and looking ahead, what's it going to take to get you to that next level?
I think for us, a huge thing, and it's constantly the battle for us, and I think for most people, is continually adding more volunteers. You know, we're at the place right now where our children's ministry has like tripled in size. We're still not huge, but when you go from a midweek program of 5 to a midweek program of 30,
uh-huh.
or we just go from one kid on Sunday morning to 15, like that's like a huge jump, right?
It is.
So you think about, okay, what are we going to do now if we get 30 kids on Sunday morning? Or what are we going to do if we get 90 kids on a midweek program? So I think for us, it's just, we are constantly, and I'm constantly just trying to continue to cast the vision to our church. So we have volunteers coming alongside, so we're prepared for when those kids show up.
Excellent.
So like there are some nights there, well, I've been off this year, but last year in our midweek program, there were some nights when we had our leader ratios, we had enough to double up. So we had 2 leaders with every group of 7. And sometimes they would feel like, well, why am I here? You don't really need me. I was like, no, we do need you, because next week we could be the week that we have triple the amount of kids show up, and we need you to be here and know what you're doing and be ready for when that growth happens.
And that takes a lot of vision casting, doesn't it? Because you have to help them see what you're seeing and helping them to understand that you're doing now what you would be forced to do later. And so that takes a lot of vision casting. It takes a lot of people learning the heart of the house, and that this is your heart. This is why are you doing this? Because you want to see more kids come to Christ. You want to make disciples. How do you do that? Well, I got to have leaders, and it takes leaders to do it. It takes finances, you know, it takes nickels to get noses, you know? And so, so it's a lot of work, isn't it? To keep that vision burning in them. What kind of structure do you have in place to just minister to your volunteers? I'm just curious. I'm going to go a little off script here. But, What kind of things do you guys do? What structure do you have in place just to keep them encouraged?
One thing that I started doing a couple years ago, and I actually got the idea, I sat online on Dale Hudson's blog, and he talked about, I think it was something along the lines of Payday Friday, where once a week you send out a story or a video or something to your volunteers about a win that happened in your children's ministry. And so they're constantly seeing the fruits of what is happening. So whether that's a small thing like, hey, this is something that a kid said in our children's ministry on Sunday, or this family connected, this kid gave their life to Jesus, you know, letting your volunteers know what's happening so they see that what they're doing is actually paying off. So I have to be honest, I'm not great at doing that every single week. But one time that I really do try to focus on it is during what we call our kids experience, which is our alternate to VBS that we actually do now. We have the volunteer base. But every day during that week, I would just send out a short video to all our volunteers highlighting one story of something that happened in a kid's life the previous night. And I cannot tell you how much that did to encourage our volunteers and keep them motivated. Another thing that I did in my second year here was, after we had, you know, been casting the vision of, okay, you know, we want to see kids reached, I actually decided to take a huge step of faith and say, we want to reach 100 families in our town by the end of this year. And the first time I said that in our Sunday morning service, people probably thought I was crazy. I felt crazy. But I would constantly reiterate that dream to our volunteers, and I would update them on it. I would actually keep track of every time a new family connected with our ministry, whether through a special event or a midweek or a Sunday morning. And by the end of the year, we actually did reach that goal. And, you know, it took a huge step of faith for me, but I think volunteers seeing faith and seeing that they're a part of this really encourages them to keep going on the nights when maybe not that many kids show up, or that they have a really tough night with the kids' behaviors. And it, you know, seeing that big picture and constantly putting that in front of them helps keep motivate them. And one more thing, I am such a huge advocate of one-on-one connection with volunteers.
Yes.
And so I know that as our church grows, this is getting harder and harder to do, but I still try to make it a priority to connect with the people that are volunteering in our ministries on a regular basis. When I started, that meant, you know, connecting with the leaders that led particular stations or areas every single week or every second week in my office. Can't always do that now, but what I do try to do is connect some way, whether that's we have a private Facebook group for our volunteers, whether it's through just a card, dropping off a coffee to their workplace, just to do something that allows them to feel like they're appreciated. And I schedule that into my calendar, you know, that on this day,
good,
I'm going to spend some time appreciating my volunteers. And that has went such a long way for us, because people feel like what they're doing actually matters. Mm-hmm. And it's valuable, not just to me, but to our church family and to the kids that they're ministering to.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I think that's an area where a lot of, I know I missed it when I was in a smaller church, of thinking that, you know, well, if I tell them, you know, verbally, that's good enough. Mm-hmm. And we often stopped there. So I love your intentionality of scheduling it in. You know, nowadays, just shooting a text and saying, hey, I appreciate you for you. Thank you for serving on our team. And I'm praying for you today. Those are things. I mean, yeah, you can do the, you know, the gift cards and the candy and all the, but I think what you hit on, spending time with them and doing that, and then as you grow, finding another person that can be a coach, and you put them into that position, and you know, you start breaking them out. I mean, that's, I serve in a multi-site church, but my campus is smaller right now, and so we're setting up coaches for teams that we don't even have yet. And so our coaches sometimes are like, well, I'm not really overseeing very many people. Oh, but you will. we're going to get there, you know? And so, and I'm going to need your help to appreciate and love and care for and make sure our team stays healthy. And I'm not going to be able to get to all the volunteers. So I like that approach. I think that's a good piece of wisdom there, that if you're in a small church, you may need to recruit one person to be a coach of a team that's not even fully built yet. And then you pour into them, and then they pour into somebody else.
You know, for me, I don't have in place right now, although it's something that's on my list of things to do when I get back into the swing of things in a month or so. But, you know, we don't have a formal coach in place per se, but I have seen that appreciation is contagious, and that, you know, volunteers who lead particular areas of the ministry, when they feel appreciated, they start to show that appreciation to other people, and they start to encourage one another. And, you know, I have some volunteers that will let me know things that are happening in other people's lives and in other people's ministries or classes, or, hey, did you know this happened on Thursday night? And I don't know what happened, but they're just naturally and organically kind of taking on that role of coach. If you're in a smaller church, my encouragement would be to look for those people and then harness that potential to get them to help you encourage volunteers, because that's not something that you can let go as you grow. It's so important.
Absolutely. I love that. I mean, and honestly, that's it. That's the principle Jesus gave us in scripture is with the parable of the talents, is you found somebody that was faithful and little and you give them more. And so, yeah, if you see somebody naturally with that gifting to say, you know, this is what I do, I have that gift of hospitality or encouragement, then harness it and unleash it.
Definitely.
That is fantastic. Well, let me ask you this. You know, you have the joy of working with your husband, and you know, he was the youth pastor, you were the kids pastor. And I'm just wondering, because I know sometimes, and it happens in small churches, especially with volunteer pools being smaller, that sometimes if your structures aren't clear as far as recruitment, onboarding, serving, all that kind of stuff, it can get really messy, because you're kind of, I hate to use the word competing for the same people, but you are, in some ways. You're looking for those small group leaders and those people that have a heart to build relationships with kids. Some obviously older than younger, but I'm just curious, what do you guys do to make it work? How have you set up structures? I mean, obviously you can call a meeting and around the dining table, I guess, which probably isn't the greatest thing to do sometimes, but how do you guys set those structures up so that you make sure that the student ministry and the kids ministry is working together and not burning somebody out on both ends either?
Well, I'll tell you, when we started doing this, we did not even think about that. That was not even on our radar. And what quickly was happening is we had the same four or five people doing everything. They were at our youth ministry. They were at our kids ministry. They were helping set up for VBS, and they were taking our kids to youth weekends. And so we realized quickly that that was not going to be sustainable. And so what we started doing is my husband and I, with our lead pastor at the time, would sit down and we would kind of brainstorm people who were volunteering or who could volunteer. And we would try to figure out the best place to put them. And so sometimes Andrew would say, I really want this person for youth ministry. And I would say, well, I think they'd be better in children's ministry. And we'd kind of hash it out. In a small church, that's an advantage because you kind of know the people that are in your congregation. Right. And we would try to find a place that they fit and then keep them there. So it actually came probably in my husband's actually transitioned to a new role at the church, but probably in the last year we were both serving in those positions, we kind of committed to each other that if someone was serving in the youth ministry, they wouldn't serve in the children's ministry. Uh-huh. And that was tough. And at times it meant one of us sacrificed a great leader to the other person, but it also forced us to kind of expand our horizons and start looking outside. You know, people always say that thing with like 80% of people doing 20% of the work,
right?
Or no, that's not right. It's the other way around. 20% of people doing 80% of the work. we kind of had to go outside that 20% and start being creative and recruiting and looking for people. And when we did that, we actually found some really amazing, unexpected volunteers. just one example, I spotted an older man in our congregation, you know, late 50s, early 60s, who had never volunteered in children's ministry, that I thought was going to be a great crew leader. And I went after him. I talked to him. I prayed. I probably harassed him a little, but eventually he said, okay, I'll give it a try. And he is a phenomenal crew leader. One of the best I've ever seen in children's ministry. Kids actually, when I come into ministry, they ask me where he is because they don't want to see me. They want to see him. And, you know, it's just so cool that because we put those structures in place and those commitments where we wouldn't have the same volunteers, it forced me to go outside and actually find some really amazing volunteers that might have been unexpected.
Cool. Very good. I love it. See, again, you're not letting limitations stop you. You're looking into that gap and going, okay, what do we have to do to get creative and to think differently? And that's great. Well, last question here that I want to throw at you is, what are some of the lessons that you've learned when you didn't have structure in place, when you didn't have a plan for something? What were some of the things that you learned by that?
One of the first things that I learned, and it's my motto in ministry, is that chaos breeds chaos. We all know that kids ministry at the best of times can be chaotic, but I learned quickly that if I did not have structures in place, if people didn't know what their jobs were, if we didn't have a plan for the hour we had the kids with us, it was just going to be chaos. And so I very quickly learned that without structure, things go wild very fast. So that was probably one of the first lessons I learned. Another thing that I learned, and we kind of touched on this already, but is what you prepare for is what you'll receive. Yes. And that if you anticipate that kids aren't going to show up, or you anticipate that people are not going to commit, you end up communicating that. You might not think you are, but I learned quickly that when I got up in a pulpit on Sunday morning and had, you know, my pitch for children's ministry, people sensed if I didn't actually think this was going to work. Uh-huh. So I had to learn to prepare for what I believe God wanted to do in our ministry. And when I didn't do that, we didn't receive what God really could and wanted to do in our ministries. And the last lesson I learned, and I'm still learning it, is that every single day you had to treat your ministry like it's the most important one on the planet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were some days, I'll be honest, when I would say to my husband, you know, Andrew, we're only going to have 4 or 5 kids show up tonight. Why are we going through all this work? Why are we, you know, spending all this time making props or pouring into take-home sheets or creating Facebook posts or doing all these things for the 4 or the 5 or the 10? But what I learned is that, and it kind of goes back to what I've already said, every single day I have to discipline myself to say, right now at this time, this is the most important ministry that is on the planet. This is what God has tasked me with for this time. And whether 4 kids or 400 show up tonight, I need to treat them and this ministry like it matters. And kids pick up on that. Volunteers pick up on that. Yeah. If I was in a place where I felt like, I'm so frustrated, this doesn't really matter, they quickly picked up on that. But when I was in the mindset of, this is important, these kids are so important, and this night is going to be amazing, and I'm going to prepare for it, they picked up on that too. And it changed the way that our ministry functioned.
Yeah. And it communicates something that's obviously, I know all of us in children's ministry are passionate about, that every soul matters. Mm-hmm. And so even if you only have a few, you know, you do for a few what you wish you would do for many. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it's a beautiful thing when I hear people that are serving in smaller churches, you know, because it's easy to get discouraged. It's easy to start comparing and saying, well, you know, if only I had more kids and more resources and more space. But you know what? God gives you where he wants you to be the most effective and reach the people that only you can reach. And those people are important. And without you being there, how else are they going to hear? How else are they going to know they're valued by the Father? So, well done. I mean, I appreciate what you're doing, and I hope that I know you've encouraged the listeners out there, because I'm sure there are people out there that are going, yeah, I get it. I'm right with you, Julia. I get it. And I hope that they've caught a vision of, don't sit there and keep looking at what you don't have. Start preparing, like you said, for the future, and step out in faith and do now, and let God step into the gap. Let him show up and provide. It's what he does. It's amazing when we prepare for it, what he'll do. Good stuff, Julia. Thank you so much for sharing your heart. And I have no doubt that if we talk again, I'm going to hear amazing things of what God's doing up there in Canada, with your ministry. I have no doubt that it's going to continue to grow and God's going to bless it. What if some of the people want to get in touch with you? What's the best way for people to reach out and ask questions or to talk shop with you?
I actually recently, because, you know, I don't have enough to do, started a blog, and that blog is ministrymom.ca. And so if you get on there and just go into the contact page, my Facebook profile's there, Twitter, my email, all that stuff. So it's all consolidated there. So that's probably the easiest way for people to get in touch with me.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for taking time out of your day and a busy mom and children's pastor. We really appreciate you being part of the Kids Ministry Collective community and sharing with us. And I hope people will start looking and evaluating what their structure is and what they have and where they want to go and what little things. I mean, you said it very wisely. You broke it down in little pieces and started working from there. That's good stuff. So thanks again for joining me on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's always exciting. I love talking about this stuff. So I was so glad that I got the opportunity to share with you and some of the people who are listening, because this is one of my passions and I could talk about it for a really long time. So I'm glad that we got a few minutes to chat about it today.
Well, good, good. Well, thanks again. And to all our listeners, if you need anything, please reach out. You can catch me on Twitter, Facebook, in the Facebook group. You can always message me. I'm at your service. My heart is to build the kingdom. If we can serve you or connect you with resources or connect you to people that can help you and encourage you, by all means, reach out and know that you're not alone, because the Kids Ministry Collective was created as Scripture says, iron sharpens iron. That means you have to be in community. That means you have to be together. So reach out. Let us know that we can help you. If this podcast has been an encouragement, I'd encourage you to subscribe on iTunes or on the Podbean site, either one. But we'd love to have some reviews and all that good stuff. That just helps us get the word out more so that more people can hear about it and connect with others in the community. So God bless you all, and thank you for listening, and we'll catch you on another episode of the KMC.
You've been listening to the Kid Ministry Collective Podcast. We hope you've been informed, encouraged, and entertained for these few moments. We'd love for you to connect with us on our Kid Ministry Collective Facebook group or subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. It'd also mean a lot if you'd leave a review so we can help others learn about this podcast. If you want, you can watch this episode on video on our Kids Ministry Collective YouTube page. Our goal of the KMC is from Proverbs 27:17, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Join us again soon for another KMC podcast.